Welcome back to Gooner Fantasy TV for our weekly podcast where we just have a chat about all things Arsenal. With me, I've got Sergi Boy.
Hello, good to be back.
Dan the Man Mountney.
Evening.
Glenn.
Hello.
And Leif.
Hello.
Straight into the game. But Leif, I was just going to ask first, what was it like being a journalist with your unique view of the game in an empty stadium?
Yes, yeah, it was very strange. I was there on... I was at St Mary's on Thursday and Bramall Lane on Sunday as Arsenal correspondent for Varvel. It was really, really strange. It was just really eerie. The stadium was obviously absolutely empty, apart from 300 people working there, basically. All the staff and security were very friendly, very professional. And it was just strange being in a ground where there was no atmosphere whatsoever. We were at the game in October when Arsenal lost 1-0. And the atmosphere at Bramall Lane, as we all know, is pretty intense. And it was really strange not to have that. And all you could hear was basically, you know, Mikel Arteta and a few players and the sort of and just the noise from the players, basically. It was strange. But I thought it made for a more pure atmosphere in terms of you're watching the game for football's sake, basically. Obviously, if I'd have been at home, I'd have maybe been slightly less engaged. But it was a real privilege to be there and I really enjoyed it. But it was very, very strange. It's probably one of the strangest games I've reported on. And yeah, well, I've reported on non-league games where there's been like one man and his dog. So it's not the fact there wasn't that many people there. It was the reason why there were no people there in a Premier League stadium, basically. And it was very, very strange, I've got to admit.
Yeah, and what were the protocols like for getting in? Was it all like a rigmarole getting in and out the ground and all that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it had to be, really. It was they were really strict going through. You had to fill in reams of forms and you obviously get your temperature tested and things like that. And very, very professional from Sheffield United. Can't knock anyone there. They're all doing their job. And yeah, luckily I managed to get in. But it was a very, very strange atmosphere. I was really, really engaged in the game. There was obviously sort of three or four seats away from anyone else in the press box. So you've got a real sort of unique view. The referee was obviously influenced by the fact there was no one there, because I'm not sure we would have given a penalty if there was 30,000 people in the ground, but I'm sure we're going to talk about that anyway. But I enjoyed it, but it was very, very strange.
Yeah, very interesting. Right, on to the game itself. Arteta said Arsenal needed that win. Obviously, are we seeing Arsenal wake up after a sluggish start? Is there enough evidence for that, Dan?
Yeah, I think so. I think the main thing was the spirit they showed to obviously go on and win the game after conceding what would have been a late equaliser. There's still a long way to go, I think we all know that. But there are some promising signs in terms of, you know, the team spirit and that will and that drive and the fight. There's still plenty of work to do on the pitch in terms of tactically, recruitment, whatever. But yeah, there are some positive signs there. I think we've said that throughout Arteta's reign, to be honest.
Yeah, obviously we saw Luiz come back in to the starting lineup. Jamie Carragher's prophecy that he's never going to play in the Premier League again for Arsenal is still on the cards. But what did you think of his performance, Glenn?
I mean, he did okay. He was better than his performance against City when he came on, wasn't he? I was just saying, you're asking me that question, but I have to admit, and I tweeted during the game, that I'm finding these sort of post-lockdown games extremely strange and very, very unengaging. I don't know if it's the lack of crowd noise that sort of is not there to sort of prompt you at moments, but I just find my concentration lapsing and I'm just drifting off.
Yeah.
So by the end of the game, with all the substitutions and stoppages and stuff, I can almost not tell you who was finally left on the pitch. He did okay. There's still a defensive mess up towards the end, wasn't there?
Yeah. Do you boys agree with that? I mean, we had a few responses to Glenn's tweet saying that they agreed with that assessment of the restart football. Serge, have you found that so far?
Well, the team's definitely been more sluggish and a bit slower out of the traps. They've definitely looked like they've got a bit of that summer weight that they put on in lockdown, not knowing when they're being back. They're a bit slower, a bit chunkier. But, you know, it's a different experience. But, you know, I've seen plenty of games played behind closed doors before. And these are definitely better than those, because they've actually bothered with crowd sound online. And there seems to be a little bit more interest there. But it's definitely not as peak fun as it was previously.
Yeah. Dan, do you think Arsenal were taken by surprise by the sort of how it feels to play in an empty stadium? Think that's they've taken to it worse than other teams and now they're sort of getting towards it?
Well, I think it certainly helped them yesterday. I think if they'd have gone to Bramall Lane, where the crowd would have been on their back the whole time, as Leif said, we went for the Premier League game late last year. And yeah, the crowd there is ridiculously noisy. So I think they were helped by it yesterday, not having, you know, a home crowd on their back. I'm not sure if it's particularly going to affect them that badly, to be honest, not having a crowd at the Emirates. I mean, insert joke about quiet crowds at the Emirates anyway. So yeah, I think they've started to cope with it. They're dealing with it well.
Glenn, you had a point?
Yeah, just in relation to that sort of, you know, the away fans not being able to get on the visiting team's back. I don't know, I picked up on it yesterday. It might have been occurring in previous games and it's just passed me by, but I noticed over the Tanwich Bramall Lane yesterday, they were pumping out boos when decisions weren't going in the home side's favour, which I thought was a bit out of order. And they really cranked them up for our penalty. Did anyone else notice that?
Yeah. I think it's quite good, actually.
Have they been doing it in other games?
Yeah.
All right, so I noticed that. That's the only time that I got out of my pram watching that game. So I was going, it's a bit unsporting.
I've got to say, on top of that, you have a good point about the PA, but prior to the game and half time, the PA at Sheffield United absolutely blasted out sort of, I don't know what you call it, stadium anthems, you know, Kasabian, those sort of type of songs. And it wasn't a coincidence that, you know, Sheffield United had a really, really good start to the season, basically, because their home crowd is almost worth point, or it certainly gets behind their backs and gives them almost like a 12th man, really. And they were trying to do that yesterday, and it almost made your ears bleed. It was so loud, in a bid to sort of raise the players' adrenaline levels, potentially. But it didn't work because, you know, Sheffield United weren't the team that they played at the Emirates when they got a deserved 1-1 draw. And they certainly weren't the team that beat us 1-0, and it could have been a lot more at Bramall Lane in October, basically. I think they're spent now. I just think they've climbed one mountain and they're not going to climb another. Even when they equalised, I was convinced we were going to go through. But it was really interesting, like you say, about the noise, because they were really, really pumping out the music in a bid to get the players going. And it didn't work for them ultimately, but it was quite interesting about that.
And I noticed they read out the players' names as well, didn't they? Is that just to remind the players they're actually starting? Because no one else wants to know.
Well, yeah. When I was at St Mary's on Thursday, it was so hot. It was almost one of the hottest games I've ever been to. And the Arsenal subs were sat right in front of me. And you could see Oza with the umbrella and Reece Nelson had a shirt on his head because he was so hot, and all the sort of staff and officials were handing him drinks throughout the game. It was ridiculously hot that day, I've got to say, basically. But yeah.
And obviously after the winner from Mr. Danny Savoia.
Where's the paella?
yeah, I'll just bring out a bowl of.
Don't worry about the last bit of the song, Jesus.
No, I was going to say, where's the last bit?
I did a tweet and I starred out the word, and it seemed to do quite well.
yeah, we'll leave that off our PG podcast. obviously now Arsenal are through to face Man City in the semi-final. Obviously, probably not Arteta's favoured opponent, was it, Serge?
Yeah, I mean, the draw wasn't exactly going to be favourable to us, irrespective of who we drew. You know, you've got Chelsea, who seems to be on fairly good form, especially against when they played City. United seem to always manage to spangle a win somehow. And City, in their game yesterday or the day before, they against Newcastle, they just looked like they were just so comfortable on the ball. And they haven't really lost any of their sort of team ethic over the lockdown. They seem to really know where everyone is on the pitch. I mean, that goal from Sterling against Newcastle was just easy. And if we've got a centre-back partnership of Mustafi and David Luiz, I fear that we might see more of those balls whipping in with a lot more comfort.
Yeah. And we'll discount reality for a moment and just ask whether, regardless of the result against Man City and the performance, would a win for Arsenal in the FA Cup, would that salvage the season? Life.
Oh, sorry.
I knew that. Silverware, it's a good year, regardless where you finish in the league. And I'd love to win the FA Cup again.
Also, European qualification, of course.
That's a question that sort of supplementary question we can answer in terms of would that affect them next season when they're trying to regroup with the additional Europa League games. But for me, I want to win every competition Arsenal go in for. And to win the FA Cup would be absolutely amazing, considering, you know, the three other teams in it. I do remember in 2017, Arsenal played City in a semi-final. I covered that game at Wembley, and I remember Pep Guardiola. It was a tremendous performance from Arsenal, who beat City 2-1. And I remember Pep Guardiola was sort of in the theatre afterwards, in the bowels of Wembley, and you sort of, you know, there's hundreds of journalists there, and you're firing questions at him and stuff. And he was gutted. He was absolutely gutted. He turned it into Sam Allardyce or something, because he basically said, oh, the team who scores more goals wins. That was a level that he was reduced to, because he was so gutted about the fact that he'd lost to Arsenal and the fact that Arsenal played so well. And, you know, there's potentially Chelsea in the final if Arsenal beat Man City, and that's exactly what happened in 2017. Beat City in the semi-finals, beat Chelsea in the final. Bring it on. Why not?
Dan, what's the opposing view to that?
Well, I've got two things. Firstly, does winning the FA Cup not qualify you for the Europa League?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Okay. Just wanted to make that clear. The second thing, I don't think it saves the season, but I think it gives Arteta something massive to build on.
It's a golden ticket, isn't it?
Yeah, we've said it so many times about how winning a trophy can boost teams with morale and, you know, get things starting to move in the right direction. I think if they were to win the FA Cup, it would be a massive kind of foundation for Arteta to build upon and work with. Personally, I don't think they'll do it. I think City are going to be too much for us, and I think they've got better behind closed doors than they were in front of crowds, personally. So yeah, it's going to be a tough ask, but you never know. We've done it before, as Leif said a few years back, so we'll wait and see.
Glenn, do you think it's possible?
Well, as Leif mentioned there, I mean, I didn't think we had a prayer in the last semi-final when we played City, and we ground that one out. And then even going into the Chelsea final when we had, you know, most of our defence ripped out, I didn't give us much chance. And, you know, you never know in the Cup. There's always a chance. I wouldn't write us off completely. You know, it'd be one of those things that football throws up, doesn't it? Arteta getting one over on his ex-club, so...
Yeah,
let's try and sort of, you know, keep our fingers crossed. Is that going to be at Wembley?
Yeah. Yes, the weekend of July 18th.
Why?
There's a huge empty Wembley. Yeah, that will be
all right.
Vision. Yeah, we'll move on to Kieran Tierney's performance at Sheffield United. We'll come on to his arrival at the game. But Dan, what was your assessment of his performance?
Well, I've been really impressed in the past few games, not just yesterday. I think I'm going to utter a name that I know we don't like to say, but I think he's probably the best left back we've had since Ashley Cole, to be honest, in terms of what he's shown so far. And I think if he keeps developing, big call. Yeah, well, I mean, name somebody else. I think he's got a lot of room for improvement, but I like everything about him. He's got a really good delivery on him, decent defender, really solid, likes to get forward on the overlap. It just seems like generally an all-round, nice, decent bloke who is, from what Arteta says, willing to learn and willing to keep developing. And things are going in the right direction. I did see a tweet from Amy Lawrence who said that she's reminded a lot of Nigel Winterburn when she watched Tierney play. So that's quite a big thing as well. So, yeah, hopefully he just keeps going. The injury problems that he does have might be a concern, but hopefully he can get over that and keep going in the right direction as he is.
Leif, do you want to explain your recline back into your chair, as Dan said that?
I'm just not a big fan of Ashley Cole anymore, basically. He broke my heart when he left Arsenal, so I hate any reference to him. But yeah, I mean, if we're going to look at it objectively, he was a brilliant, world-class left-back. And would Tierney be at that level? I don't know. But I watched him intently at Southampton and St Mary's on Thursday. From the press box, and his athleticism was fantastic on such a hot day. He's got that real drive to sort of just run down the left flank and really link up and dovetail with his colleagues. And he carried that form on Sunday as well at Sheffield United. He linked really well. He had a couple of shots as well potentially, and he could have scored. He teed up Pepe for a chance just before half time as well. I thought defensively he was excellent. Attacking wise, there's a lot more to come from him as well. Like you say, he just needs to stay fit. If he stays fit and has a run of games, really gets, you know, gets his sort of mojo going and avoids injury, then he's a real, real prospect. And the fact that he came on, you know, he got off the coach. I actually saw him get off the coach, you know, when I was going into the media entrance. And yeah, Tesco's plastic bag, good on him. I'm not like, I think other people have tweeted as well, but I'm not saying Arsenal's problems will be removed completely if every player had his Louis Vuitton bag, wash bag removed from him to be a bit more down to earth. But at the same time, I love that. I love the fact that Kieran Tierney got off the team coach with Tesco's bag with
his gear. Had his meal deal for the journey, didn't he?
Had his meal deal, yeah.
He tweeted after, didn't he? Every little helps, in response to Arsenal's tweet. Very
calm. Did you see the comments from Arteta after the Southampton game about him as well?
Go on.
Arteta basically said he's still got to adapt because the weather here is a bit different to what it is in Scotland.
Well, it wasn't Thursday, it was baking.
Yeah, true.
But apart from that, no, I'm not sure what he meant.
I love having him back, you know, because after we had glimpses before that long break, it was so great to see him. Tierney, what I love about him, he never hides, he always shows for the ball. He's very confident on it. If he gets dispossessed, you know, he generally tends to go back and win it back straight away. Hopefully, I'll be able to get into a ground and get my song going about him that I started at the Liège game. But
What was it, Glenn? What was the song?
Well, it's to the tune of Dolly Parton's Jolene. I'm not going to sing it, but it goes, Tierney, 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 Tierney. We signed the boy from Celtic, now he's Arsenal's number three. It's short, punching, no. To the point, and it's
scared.
How many people sang that with you when we were playing the Age?
Oh, no, I did it drunk walking back on my own when the bus was full.
Oh, OK, yeah, that makes a lot more sense.
It feels like he's obviously only been able to make 8 Premier League appearances this season. It feels like even all of you and Arsenal fans elsewhere are sort of reserving full judgment on him until he's got some more minutes. Is there, do you think, a worry that with Arsenal's history with injuries, he is going to be another sort of Wilshere? Is that a serious worry for you guys?
Well, I think most of the previous podcast, I always said, be wary of the fated Messiah, because he's not going to come in and solve all of our problems on his own. But I think one of the positives about having a marauding wing-back is that he actually knows how to defend. He's not all about speed, running forward and attacking. He actually focus primarily on his defensive routine before he thinks about anything offensive. And what's important for him coming through our team now is that he's got people in front of him he can lay the ball off to, so he doesn't have to run the entire length himself. And I think the way we've got the team set up at the moment, it's helping him sort of come to fruition, because he doesn't have to run 40, 50 yards. He only has to run 10, 20 yards, and then he's always pinging back to his defensive role. I mean, as you saw, he was coming back and helping, holding out anytime there was an issue in defence. Anytime the ball was released in midfield, he was always there covering. So that's something that's quite positive that we haven't seen in an Arsenal kit for a long time. And I think, fingers crossed, that maybe he is the fated Messiah that we've been waiting for.
I did like the three at the back, which they played at Southampton and yesterday at Sheffield United as well, because it allows the two auxiliary wing-backs to really bomb on. But you can turn it into a five when you're under pressure, basically. That's what Sheffield United have been doing all season. They've had Egan, they've had Baldock, you know, who's the other? There's a couple of others as well. But they were so fluid. I was watching them, like, certainly in the first half. They were morphing from a two and a three and a four, even to a five when out of possession. And it that was a bedrock of their success, basically, and the bedrock of the way they built to go forward. And I think a three with two wing-backs for Arsenal works well. Certainly with Granit Xhaka coming back, and he's been really influential, and I think he's done well. And I'm not his biggest fan, but I think for the last few games, he's done really, really well for Arsenal. And that helps with a three with two wing-backs as well. So,
while we're talking on Granit Xhaka, I saw a tweet the other day that got a fair amount of abuse below it, which said, would you, if Aubameyang leaves in the summer, would you hand the captain's armband back to Xhaka? Just like to get your reaction.
No. Give it to Tierney. That's what I'd give it to.
Yeah, would you?
Yeah, why not?
He certainly lead by example, I think.
With the
Xhaka thing, I don't think all parties wouldn't want that, including himself. No.
I don't think he'd won it. I don't think I also want to give it to him. So
just Emery sitting somewhere by himself thinking, please give Xhaka the armband.
Just talking about Sheffield United. Didn't Dan ask Emery a question at the league game?
Oh, don't get me started. I'm still angry. So, yeah, I asked him. It was kind of at the point when things were starting to unravel. And I asked him, do you know your best team? Do you know who is your first choice starting 11? And he just started talking about corners. And at that point, I knew this is over. This is done.
I remember walking back to the car with Dan, and Dan was just ranting. Just ranting about that answer.
That was dreadful, that performance. We were in the way, weren't we, Toby? I mean, that was such a dreadful performance after that.
Well, they attest that you don't get to often ask a question. And when you do get to ask one, you want a decent answer. So, yeah, hence why I was ranting a fair way on the way back.
I think you stopped ranting about Tottenham and services on the M1 about 4 in the morning that night, Dan.
Yeah, well, can you blame me?
That was a good trip. I saw a lot of reaction on Twitter to the coverage of the Arsenal Sheffield United game. A lot of people complaining about Match of the Day in particular, and the commentary from Steve McManaman. What was your guys' take on that?
Watching football at home is obviously not as inciting as watching it in a stadium, but it's compounded and made infinitely more aggravating by an aggressive Scouser shouting the word Fletch every 5 minutes. And then to compound it worse, the fact that one of Sheffield United's players called Fleck, and then he just starts shouting about Fleck every 5 minutes. And it was just, I genuinely had to mute it and try and find a stream from NBCSN, because I'd rather have United States commentators than Steve McManaman talking utter twaddle.
You know how you can turn off, you can like press the red button to turn off the crowd sound? Is there a button to turn off the commentary?
I wish. Because it was really ruining the experience, because... You know, I'm not sounding like a hard done by Arsenal fan, but it does seem a lot of commentators and pundits do seem to be really frustrated when Arsenal actually succeed, well, after they've written us off.
Yeah. And when whenever sort of like a ref gave us a free quick kick and that, they look at the replay and McManaman would be going, not a lot in that, not in there, really. He's just gone down easy. It's like every single time we got a free kick.
The fact that we're trying to discuss the penalty given to from Lacazette's foul and saying, oh, it's very soft. I was like, no. He took him down in the box. It's not soft or hard. It's a pen.
Yeah.
Debate about it.
These are the different parameters that are set when it's Arsenal. I know we're paranoid and we feel a bit hard done by, but there are so many games when they'd analyse that on the highlights, particularly the likes of Shearer, and they would say, under these rules, he's been touched. He's every right to go down. That's a foul. That's a penalty. When it's us, it's like, oh, it's a soft one, really. You know, the ref didn't really have to give it.
Yeah. Jermaine Genus is my pet hate. I can't stand him. I know, but he drives.
It's a long list, isn't it?
Yeah.
Danny Mills.
God. But is this something that like Arteta could harness in a way and almost say, well, you know, it sounds against the world, a siege mentality kind of thing?
Why not?
I mean, I felt so sorry for Alex Scott on Match of the Day 2 with Dion Dublin in front of her saying, you reckon it'll be, he says this is probably going to be a Manchester derby. It's like, oh, and Arsenal just doesn't exist, do they?
Well, do you know what? I would seriously worry about Chelsea. Chelsea looked good to me.
Yeah.
But the idea Dion Dublin suggesting neither Chelsea or Arsenal are going to get to the finals in a Manchester derby. Does he not realise how many times we've won the FA Cup and recently?
What is Dion Dublin, though? He presents homes under the hammer, you know.
I remember we played at Cambridge against Arsenal in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup in 1991 at Highbury. Cambridge took about 10,000 fans. We beat them 2-1. Remember that game because Lee Dixon had a massive argument with Tony Adams on the pitch. Mm. Anyway, after that digression.
Going back to your question, Toby. I think Arteta can use some of the sort of feeling to try and rile up the Arsenal players and try and get them more motivated to prove against the odds of all the commentators that they are capable. But I think the mentality is not quite there yet. But I think Arteta is trying to get the mentality that way.
Let's move on to one of our favourite topics on Going to Fantasy TV, the parasol wielding, 350k earning Mesut Ozil. Still hasn't featured since the restart. Dan, what is your best guess as to why Arteta still doesn't trust him?
Sorry, I was just imagining him threatening him, Arteta, with that heart. Blaming.
I feel wielding is the correct word.
I don't know why he's not playing. I think, you know, it's easy to speculate on the reason why he hasn't been playing. But if Arteta feels like he's not trying well enough, which I think probably is the reason, then fair enough, you know. You're not going to pull your weight. It doesn't matter how much money you're on or what you've done in the past or your stance in the game. If you're not doing it and the manager doesn't think you're worthy of the place, what's the point? You know, don't play him. I completely agree if that is the case. As we say, we can speculate all day long what it actually is. So, yeah, we'll just wait and see what happens. But I think his time at Arsenal is coming to a close.
Looks to me like it's just, you know, part of Arteta's ruthless approach at Arsenal. Leif, do you think that just means Ozil's just not on board with it?
I think he's been lazy. I think he hasn't trained well. Arteta's given him 6 months' worth of chances. You know, obviously coming in December, I know we've had the 3-month break, but he's been watching him in training since the restart and prior to that. And he's just not impressed him. He's not impressed him by what can only be described as a lack of effort. And it's inexcusable to have a lack of effort. You can understand players don't play well and you loss of form and not particularly good players to start with. But a lack of effort is unforgivable. And that looks like what Ozil has done. He was sat in front of me, literally 4 or 5 rows away at Southampton on a baking hot day. And he was obviously, you know, I could see him with the umbrella. And obviously that was that famous photo as well. But it was instructive when I think Eddie got the ball in the net from a Saka cross early on and the guy was disallowed, rightly so, to be fair. Lacazette jumped up. I was watching all the subs. After them jumped up, Ozil was just like looking around. He was just, you know, and maybe that's what he is. Maybe he's just very languid. He doesn't get excited about anything. But that for me summed up quite a lot for me. It was very instructive that he didn't leap up because he wasn't really supporting his teammates. He wasn't particularly interested. Didn't seem to want to be there. And that seems to be his general demeanour at London Colney as well. Hence the fact he hasn't been picked since the restart. And for me, it's just not good enough. And it's so disappointing because he's such a good player on his day. But on his day, when how many times has he been on his day? Napoli in 2013, Leicester last season, Bayern Munich, when we beat them 2-0, we had a decent game then. How many other games? You know, at that level, you want to be doing it week in, week out. He's doing one game a season at the moment that seems to be brilliant. And it's just not good enough. And Arteta's had enough. And the sooner he's out of there, he's just a divisive presence at the moment, whether he likes it or not, whether he thinks he is or not. And we need to remove him. We need to remove him because it's not helping the squad. It's getting the fans annoyed. And obviously, we need to remove his wage bill or some of it if he goes on loan and we pay off his wages. But for me, he hasn't got a future at Arsenal, surely, after what Arteta has done over the last four games.
That's really interesting what you say about his reaction, because we've speculated a lot about his body language and whether, you know, we know he's a, I don't know, what's the word for us, sort of languid,
majestic,
as he moves around. But I mean, Dan, you had a point there. What do you think?
It's interesting you mentioned that. I interviewed Charlie Gilmore a few weeks back. He was playing for Arsenal, was now at Norwich. And he was asking about Mesut Ozil, because when he made his debut, he replaced Mesut Ozil as a substitute. And I was asking him about, you know, what he's like off the pitch. And he said that he didn't understand the criticism surrounding the way he plays and whatever, because he is one of the best players he's ever played with, if not the best. But when I asked Charlie about what Mesut Ozil was like off the pitch, he said, yeah, he's just so laid back. He kind of is in his own world at times. And I think, yeah, you know, being laid back off the pitch, fine. I think we'd all agree we're fairly laid back people. But when you're at work and you've got things to do, you've got to step it up. You can't be laid back and chilled out and like you're not bothered. You know, you've got to step it up. And I think that is the case. I think the way he is off the pitch sometimes impacts the way he is on it.
Yeah, and that's the part of the whole being part of a team, isn't it? That reaction to a goal is really important for a teammate to see as well. To see that everybody cares about the team goal of going forward. I mean, Glenn, I know you've had since the restart a little bit of a change of opinion on Ozil. Where do you stand with him now?
Well, in a nutshell, Arteta gave him his chance, didn't he? Pre-lockdown, he seemed to feature in. Well, I think he featured in every game, more or less. Something's happened. I'd like to know what. I don't know why. I think he's a supreme talent, but it's no good for anyone. Like I said last week, if you know, everyone's talking about him all the time, there's clearly something that's happened. I don't know. It's just disappointing because I still think he could have something to say on the pitch, you know, particularly with a sort of cup games coming up that we may have, you know, possibly even a final. But going back to the umbrella, I was just hoping when the camera went in, and I thought he was going to float down from the stands, Mary Poppins like, with his umbrella, and scatter a bit of magic over the pitch. But Mesut Poppins.
Mesut Poppins, love it.
Arteta was known as a sub, and he just comes flying down.
Yeah. But, you know, like I said, we've got to draw a line under it. But it's easy to say we've got to get rid of him, but where's he going to go? Who's going to have him? How are they going to foot the bill? Yeah. I still think this will run them. I really do.
I was just going to say, with £350,000 a week, who's going to take those wages on, even if he goes on loan? Arsenal are going to fund at least half that if he does go on loan somewhere. If they sell him, you know, that how much is a club going to buy him for? Arsenal are probably going to take a massive hit on the wages just to get him off the wage bill. And the buying club will know that and factor it in the bid they're going to offer as well. So Arsenal are going to take a massive, massive hit on Ozil. And it's just such a shame. Yeah, absolutely.
Mkhitaryan had the same problem, though, and we did that to Roma, don't we? We're still paying £175,000 a week to Roma for him, aren't we?
Definitely.
Yeah, we're paying a fair bit. I think he's on 200, 220 or something. So, yeah maybe half of that. Yeah.
But, I mean, maybe if you look at Mesut Ozil's stats just in the Premier League in the past 5 years, he's gotten noticeably less effective. You know, the 15-16 season, he played 35 matches, 6 goals and 19 assists. Yeah. That's his best record by far. The following season, 33 matches, 8 goals, 9 assists. The following season, 26 matches, 4 goals, 8 assists. Then last year, it was 24 matches, 5 goals, 2 assists. So he's playing fewer games, fewer goals and fewer assists every year. So he's been on a significant downturn in the Premier League, which is, you know, the most important sort of statistical look at. And he's just not improving. And he's not trying to get back to his former height. So I think he's just realised he's on a bit of a nadir. And he just kind of, I think either he's probably just disappointed in himself and he doesn't really know how to get motivated again. But I mean, I don't know what the problem is. You know, Arteta played with him for 2-3 years. So they should have a very good, quite close relationship. So unless there was a bit of Wayne Bridge, John Terry about their relationship, they should be good mates.
Brilliant speculation. But that 19 assists, was, did you say 16-17 that was?
Yeah.
That was, I mean, he was the man at that time, wasn't he?
Oh, really 15-16.
I've got an issue with this. Everyone quotes that season about how good he was. He had 15 of those before Christmas and he got one or two after Christmas. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's the point in turning up half the season? I think it kind of sums him up in a way, you know.
Yeah.
First half of the season, he's brilliant. Second half, doesn't do anything. If you were to sum up his Arsenal time in one season, that would be it.
Yeah. But I mean, what I mean really is that was the Ozil brand was huge at that time, wasn't it? The assist king thing. I think that's why, you know, Adidas recently dropped him as one of their sponsors as athletes. And I think that's a big, a telling factor in his decline. But have you, in the restart games, has there been a moment where you've looked at the pitch and gone, Ozil, I would trust Ozil to come on and make a difference here?
I think a 1-0 head at Brighton with 20-25 minutes to go. I think it was the 68th minute we scored. That was the time for Ozil to come on. Really hot day. Brighton has slightly demoralised, going 1-0 down. You know, tired legs. Bring Ozil on. Look for a second goal. And it looked, I think he was sort of warming up down the touchline. And then Arteta just didn't bring him on. And for me, that would have been the moment when you thought, OK, well, he's rested him for City. He'll be back in the fold today. And when Arteta didn't bring him on after that, you suddenly gone, well, actually, I think Arteta's trying to freeze him out. Because that would have been the moment for Ozil to come on. And he didn't do it, basically. That was it for me.
Yeah. Glenn, I mean, do you see it as a sort of, when he leaves, will it be almost a black cloud leaving? Not necessarily Ozil himself, but all of the talk around it. Do you think it will be a boost to Arsenal when he does eventually just go?
Yeah, I think so. I said in the podcast last week, I used the phrase, you know, there's a lot of noise. Well, there's consistent noise around him. And you know, I'll reiterate, it doesn't benefit any of the parties. I mean, it must do his head in as well. I mean, he's a footballer. He obviously, surely he loves the game. And he's not, you know, he's not doing his job, you know, not getting picked to do his job. Just ludicrous. But yeah, I mean, I think I think it'll be best all round once he's gone.
That's what's always been the confusing thing, isn't it? It's just, does he not want to play football?
I know. I mean, you know, I would love to know what he's done, you know, what he hasn't done. But, yeah, there we go. It's something fundamental. Yeah.
It was so telling when you looked at the subs bench and you saw an untested 18-19-year-old in Matt Smith on the subs bench over Ozil. That, for me, is incredibly telling about Arteta just going, you know what, I'm not even going to bother. I'm going to try something completely different, untested, brand new. You know, and I know he said he wants to focus on his youth players, but that is, for me, that is mental that decision was made between 7 years experience, most expensive player, untested 19-year-old. And he went for
that
the untested.
Volumes, doesn't it? Yeah.
It does. Yeah. Stays
Matt,
volumes,
Smith, yeah. Matt Smith got 14 assists for the under-23s last season, so he's still done more than Ozil.
we watched him a few times for the under-23s, didn't we?
Yeah, good player, yeah.
Yeah, really, really rating, yeah.
But is he better than Ozil?
I think he is at the moment, if you ask Mikel Arteta, yeah.
Better than the parasol Ozil, anyway.
It was really small as well. It wasn't like an umbrella. It was, you know, it looked like a toy, like a child's one or something. I don't know where he got it from, but...
Pointless, yeah. Much like the man himself. But as you say, when you mentioned what actually is going to happen in the summer, obviously he's been linked before to the likes of Galatasaray and Fenerbahce. And I think before, when there was rumours of him being bought, there was no chance he was going to take a pay cut. Do you think there's any way he would take a pay cut? Do you think he's keen to get out?
I don't think he'll take a pay cut, but I think with his Turkish heritage, I think a move to Turkey, even on loan, would be a good one football-wise. But also, I think the interest in Turkey would be absolutely phenomenal, and it might be behind the scenes they could broker some sort of commercial arrangement with sponsors or something, certainly to pay half his wages potentially, or even a third. I mean, Arsenal would probably take that as well, but I think a move to Turkey would do him good. Germany, I'm not too sure at the moment, because you know, he's not the most popular player over there, and does he want to go back? Munich have just won the title for the 8th year in a row. Are they going to have him? I don't think so. So where's he going to go? Dortmund have just posted a loss of 50 million or 46 million euros. So how many teams can afford him? So I think a move to Turkey potentially could work out well for every party, basically. Whether it happens, like we've been saying, I don't know.
Yeah, he's always said that he wants to play for Fenerbahce at some point in his career. And he's, what, 32 now? So, you know, time's running out if he wants to make that move. So I think that could be a possibility. I mean, question for all of you, would you kind of accept the situation where he left permanently to go somewhere like Fenerbahce, but Arsenal subsidised his wages, and obviously not the whole amount, but a little bit of the money?
What if, in terms of if they signed him permanently?
Yeah, so if he went to Fenerbahce permanently and Arsenal made a contribution of, say, 100 grand to his wage packet still, I mean, would you take that to get him out the door?
It would be hugely embarrassing for Arsenal, but yeah, probably would. Because you're still saving 250 grand a week.
Yeah.
You're saving £1 million a month. Yeah, so good question. Yeah, I probably would. But it'd be a massive, massive humiliation for Arsenal to do that, basically.
Yes, Serge.
I don't know if any of you have seen this, but I've got a few Turkish friends, and there's actually been a GoFundMe raise up by
crowdfunding
fans to try and raise fund to bring Ozil over to Fenerbahce.
I'll put some money in. Tell me the link.
Yeah, that's
good. Good for muting, Dan.
Yeah, I've seen that surge, actually.
And I mean, the idea of it boggles my mind that they're watching the same Ozil we are, but they just love him because of who he is. And I think, you know, maybe he's seen that as well. Maybe he's making that decision. You know what? It makes sense for him. He's got to do it. But it's very easy to say you want to play for a team. It's a lot harder to say I don't want that wage packet.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of pieces. There's a lot of writing and a lot of, I'm sure we'll talk about it at the time when he does leave, a lot of sort of what could have been in a way. Are you going to feel sad when he leaves?
No.
I'll feel relieved. But with a ton of real regret, because I always want to see playmakers do well and creative talents do well, and it just didn't happen. It's not going to happen, I don't think.
I mean, we've had the history of Arsenal players that have left us through disappointment. And I won't be as bitter about him leaving as I was like Van Persie. I won't be as angry about it as like when Nasri left. It would just be...
We could do a podcast on that, couldn't we? Arsenal players have left that you hate now, because I hate Robin Van Persie. I hate Nasri. I was really disappointed in Sanya going, even though I could understand it. I was a bit gutted that Clichy went. You know, how do you... Ashley Cole broke my heart. It's like, you know, how far do you go back?
Ozil leaving is not going to break my heart. I'm not going to be angry about it.
No, that's the thing. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, yeah. It's just going to be relief more than anything, I think.
It was
just
complete apathy, much like Ozil himself. I'll just be apathetic about the situation.
Yeah, indeed.
Probably if he'd went 2 years ago, it would have been different. But now it's just dragged on too long, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And he's been given so many chances as well. That's the thing. It's not like when Emery just throws him out for the sake of it. Arteta has said, look, you start with a clean slate. Here you go. And he's not chosen to take it, basically. So, you know, the fault is, as far as I can see.
I mean, we always go back to that first press conference with Mikel Arteta. I suppose we mentioned every video. But he was asked about us and he said, you know, he's going to be a key player for us and I have to try and get the best out of him. So at least he's kind of acknowledged that there's no point in flogging a dead horse in a way. You know, he's not got the best out of him. So it's time to move on.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I'm a big one for watching managers' body language during press conferences. And I think Arteta was completely open about that. He wasn't bristling. He wasn't defensive. He wasn't, you know, sort of annoyed or just sort of saying one thing and being completely counterintuitive in what his body language is saying. He was genuinely open and responsive to the fact that he wanted Ozil to perform as well as he could, and he didn't, basically. Now you look at Arteta, every time the word Ozil is sort of thrown at him, he bristles, he tenses up, his tone changes, and it's just like he's had enough. He's absolutely had enough of Ozil, and I think, to be fair, a lot of Arsenal fans have now as well.
The one thing I'm looking forward to, Toby, is the comments underneath this video calling off all of us idiots for not liking Ozil.
No, I still like him. I still like him, but I just can't see where he's going to get his chance again. So,
to be fair, if we get those comments, just have one ready in response. It just says 2 assists in 18 months. That's all it says, just that.
Moving on to the notes section of our podcast. We'll come on to Kevin's notes in a second. But first, we'll just like to wish our good friend Jake Core happy birthday today.
Happy birthday, Jake.
Good lad.
Happy birthday.
Glenn, what's on your notes for today?
Well, again, there's not a lot because we're not going to games, so I'm not experiencing up close and that. And we've touched on a couple of things. Obviously, now there's no crowd noise, you become slightly more aware of the co-commentators. All seem to have an audible downer on Arsenal when we score. We touched on that. Didn't like the boos at Bramall Lane, but apparently that's not an isolated incident. As you know, I just popped down to Kent to visit my mum and dad. And I did notice, despite all the requests to do so, there were a lot of people not wearing face masks, which really irritated me. And that's a very serious matter. You know, here's one of Helen's handmade leopard skin print one there. But no, that did annoy me. There was a bloke in front of me. He didn't have a face mask, but he was quite content to sit there ramming a sandwich down his gullet. But, it's very annoying.
Oh, God.
On the plus side, I'm really looking forward to, I'm only saying this because it's written by an erstwhile gooner, Ian Stone. He's got a book about the Jam and growing up as a young Londoner called To Be Someone. And that is supposed to be arriving tomorrow for me. And I'm really looking forward to that because it's going to be reliving my youth reading now, I think. So, yeah, that's it.
It'll be better than Arsene Wenger's 50 best fixtures.
I was just going to ask that leopard skin face mask. I'm a bit of a face mask aficionado now. She wore got me one for Sheffield United, and my wonderful girlfriend Faye made me one for Southampton. So if I get another accreditation this season, I really want to wear a leopard skin face mask.
Okay, fair enough. We'll see what we can do. And that is made by a friend of ours, Alice. She's knocks up various designs. So, yeah, she got that one for Helen. But,
brilliant. Can you tell us to make one for a bloke with a really fat head? And if I get accreditation for one of the home games, I'll meet you in North London and I'll get it off you.
Okay, mate. It'd be easier to buy a balaclava, wouldn't it?
If you have a measurement on that head, it's like this big.
Okay, right. I'll just get a watermelon one. It'd look good, wouldn't it, over your head?
No, it doesn't make sense, Lev. Your head's there.
Yeah. Not a really big head on top of his normal size head.
End off for me.
All right, anybody else's notes?
Yeah, I've got something to ask Lev before he goes on to what he'd like to plug. So we were discussing this earlier in the chat about how I've been collecting old Arsenal programmes. And we know that Leif has been to every game to ever be played So, like, I've got the programme from Ian Wright's home debut here. I've also got the ticket. I don't know whose this was, but the ticket was in there as well. Like, who scored that day against Chelsea on October the 5th, 1991? Really?
Was that a game? I went to that game. It was either... Yeah. Off the top of my head, it was either 4-1 or 3-2.
It's one of them, yeah.
I think, remember, there was about 6,000 Chelsea there, and there was a big row down the Caledonian Road after the game, but that's a different story. oh, man, I think it was... What year? So that had been October 91.
So he
signed... His first game was Leicester City away on the 23rd of September 1991. That was 1-0 in the League Cup. Then it was Southampton away on a Saturday. We won 4-0. And then it was Chelsea at home on the 3rd of October, the week after.
I'll give you a clue. Someone who has appeared on this very YouTube channel scored in that game.
Lee Dixon. Yeah, so it was 3-2.
Lee Dixon scored a penalty, yeah.
Did he? Right, yeah.
Just so everyone knows, that this is how our car journeys to away days go.
That was a good game, there, 3-2, actually. It's always good to beat Chelsea as well. But, yeah.
Well, I proved my point. You were there. Thank you very much. That's all from me.
So I don't know, you have a little rant that you've been plotting.
Well, no, Glenn touched upon it. It's about people wearing face masks on public transport. You know, I live in Zone 6, so I got the train up to central London to meet a friend in a socially distanced barbecue atmosphere. And I was the only person on the entire train wearing a face mask, including some of the staff. So I thought to myself, I thought rules are supposed to be abided by everyone, not just picking and choosing. And it was very, very odd. And the mask I've got is quite a thick tartan sort of jobby that's cotton and rewashable. And I was sweating absolute bullets. And I was sitting there thinking, why am I doing this? Oh, yeah, because I have to, because it's health and safety over the better goods. But these other goons weren't doing it. And it made me so angry.
Yeah, I got the train for the first time in months yesterday. And there was literally, as you say, some of the members of staff aren't wearing masks. There was one who was stood next to a poster that was saying, please wear a mask at the station. I'm like, come on, seriously.
I went on the train at like midnight the other day coming home from my hometown. And this guy came up to me on the tube about midnight and just said, excuse me, do you mind me asking why are you wearing a mask? I was like, oh, just... COVID, innit?
I'm not the moron.
He was like,
COVID, innit? It's called COVID, yeah. that was the other thing. I was in London, Toby, the other day, and there was one of those protests where someone was holding a sign saying 5G causes corona. And I was just sitting there, like, genuinely amazed at the sheer audacity of some of the people out in central London chanting utter tripe and nonsense. The worst thing is, some of them were chanting that whilst wearing a mask.
I've got to say, when you go to the games, you have to wear a mask. And obviously, when you're at home, you don't wear a mask, really. So I'm not used to wearing that. Yeah, I'm not so used to wearing masks, basically. And I put it on, and I sounded like Darth Vader. And I was literally like... and it was like 38 degrees at Southampton. I was sweating buckets. Seriously, I couldn't breathe. I literally couldn't breathe. It was painful. It really was. But I'm going to get really obsessed about Glenn's leopard skin mask now. I really want one. So, yeah.
Okay.
Leif, I know you've got a couple of little quick, the emphasis on quick, plugs to...
Yes, indeed. Yeah. You've got to say massive thanks to Gav and Shawar for this T-shirt. Guna, you can buy it. They've got a brilliant range of Arsenal memorabilia and merchandise, I should say. So, get on there. And thanks for the face mask I wore at Bramall Lane as well, the bruised banana. It was pretty decent. So, yeah, cheers.
Proper decent. And also, you've been doing some good stuff on the website recently, haven't you?
Yes. Yes, thanks for reminding me, Toby. Yeah, it was. We're absolutely flying on the website. It's we've got a full sort of match coverage. We do a live blog. Massive thanks to Dan the other day for filling in for the live blog from Southampton while I was at the game. We've got all sorts of we've basically got something for everyone on there now. It's not just nostalgia, which is our core sort of strength, because we've got unrivaled coverage of Arsenal's history and Arsenal's past, and we've covered that so well, and we still will cover it so well. But we've also got news, we've got live blogs, we've got reaction, we've got lots and lots of different comment pieces as well. So give it a go if you haven't read Guna Fanzine online in a while. It's well worth it. And yeah, just want to say thanks to Dan for filling in for me the other day, and I'll stop blathering now. So yeah.
And you just you reposted, didn't you, the interview you did in 2015 with Theo Foley. The reason we haven't mentioned that is because we're going to do a video on that later in the week. But yeah, that's very well worth a read. So go over to the website and have a look. Thanks very much for watching. Please do subscribe because it really helps us out. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you very much.
Bosh, bosh, bosh.